and it is Wednesday, February the 6th, 2013. Time again for Afternoons with Amos, the talk show of record of our African-American community. I'm Amos Brown. Glad to have you here. Now, in 9 years of this program, we have broadcast live from the Marion County Jail. We have broadcast live from courtrooms. We have broadcast live from the juvenile center. We have broadcast live from a prison. We have broadcast live from a real police car. Really was a sheriff's car, but it was the same difference. It had the little lights on the top and everything. This is the first time we've ever broadcast live from inside a police station. And I'm not in handcuffs. I'm not wearing any orange today. We are live from the Operations Center of the Department of Public Safety, the Regional Something or Other Center. And I could tell it was serious because when I drove up, they had more concrete barriers than I'd ever seen in my life. Concrete bricks and all. I thought I was at the pyramids or something. This is the old Eastgate Shopping Center. And the inside of the building looks nothing like the Eastgate Shopping Center from back in the day. This is not only the command post, if you remember during the little mini blizzard we had in December, this was the command post for all of the agencies of the Department of Public Safety, police and fire and ambulance and homeland security and everyone. It's also the home of the East District of the Indianapolis Police Department, and ever since the police department and the sheriff merged 10 years ago, they kind of keep changing the name and the boundaries of the district. The East District now basically is, as I'm looking at the map, Meridian Street, the interstate on the west, Washington Street kind of on the south till it gets to Emerson, then it drops to Brookville Road going out toward Hancock County. Hancock County is the eastern boundary. The northern boundary kind of meanders along Fall Creek, 30th Street, Massachusetts Avenue, and then kind of meanders on the border of the city of Lawrence out to 46th Street and then out to Hancock County. The East District, as IMPD starts this new year, 2013, is kind of the leading in violent crime. For the first 4 weeks of 2013, violent crime in the East District is up 22%. Fueled by a 50% increase in the number of aggravated assaults. So we're here today, but it's been a while. We got a new chief of police, Rick Hite, new leadership, new ways of thinking under the leadership of the director of public safety, Troy Riggs. So we really have not had an opportunity for, I think, more than a year, maybe a year and a half, to really have the top leadership of your police department, our police department, on the program for the full 2 hours. And I know a lot of you have questions about IMPD, about the police, maybe even some parts of public safety. This is your opportunity to get those questions raised. It is also the opportunity for the leadership of IMPD, the folks from public safety, to hear those concerns, maybe answer them, get more information, follow up. We also want to walk people through, since there's been a lot of changes in the police department, what do you do if you come across a police officer who is doing their job, who is doing extra, above and beyond the call of duty? How do you commend that officer? If you run up against a police officer that maybe, in your opinion, is not doing what they want to do, how do you bring that to the police department's attention? If you feel a police officer has violated the rules, violated the law, how do you bring that to law enforcement attention? And we always tell you, everybody's got a boss. The only person that doesn't have a boss is God Almighty. Everybody else reports to somebody. So the chief is on his way. We got a whole lot of folks here. We've got a former member of the public safety fraternity, city county counselor, Steve Talley. You know, I'm getting them senior moments. I'm getting that way. Because Steve is a resident of the East. Steve, come on. Counselor, come on around here. You can borrow this chair. We're going to put the chief in since he's late, because you've seen a lot, in a lot of these last several years with the merger and whatever. How would you assess where this department is going now?
I'll tell you, we're going in the right direction. There's still a lot of work to do in the community, but I want to make one thing clear that I am here as the Crime Watch Specialist for the Annapolis Police Department today, not in my role as City County Counselor.
You know, Crime Watch doesn't get a lot of publicity. It's crime, you know, there may be people listening that have heard about Crime Watch. Maybe they've moved into a neighborhood and they might have noticed on the light pole a sign about Crime Watch. Is Crime Watch as active today as it was back in the day?
Absolutely, absolutely. We have 343 Crime Watch block clubs here on the East District.
Wait a minute, 343 on this East District map that I'm looking at?
An East District map, 343.
What do Crime Watch groups do? How small can they be? How big can they be?
Actually, we like to have 51% of those individuals who live on a block participate in the program. But, however, the commander's plan is that, hey, you know what, if there are 19 homes on the block and there's only three that want to participate, we will take the support from those three. So we will form the Crime Watch Block Club.
What do Crime Watch people do? What do you, if a block or a neighborhood decides to have a Crime Watch, what do you ask of them? What is their role? What do you want them to do?
Just be very alert. See what's going on. It's a thing that we used to do years ago as good neighbors. But in 1976, we gave it a name. We call it Crime Watch Block Club. But it's neighbors looking out for one another. They see something out of the ordinary, then they call 911. That's the only thing that we ask them to do.
One of the frustrations that I've heard over the years, and I know, Steve, that you've heard that, is I see the bad guys on my block. I see people doing wrong, or maybe they live in a neighborhood that's got, you know, the open-air pharmaceutical places. They see that. They call law enforcement, and law enforcement doesn't do anything, and they get – how do you deal with that frustration in Crime Watch?
It is frustrating, but in order to prosecute and to prosecute effectively, then the officer has to go in and do what they do in order to purchase or be able to make good witnesses in court in order to make sure that those whatever it is, that antisocial behavior stick. So it's a long, drawn-out process, and the officers perhaps can give you more detail as to what they need in order to really act.
I know one of the things that the chief is going to be talking about as he kind of takes his coat off and kind of gets settled is, as well as Commander Waters, who is the commander over here in the East District, is getting cooperation from people. And in the last 72, 96 hours, we had an example of that with that missing young lady where people, just as I understand it, was talking with Chaplain David Cody, that was understanding that people just did what they needed to do and really was out there trying to help law enforcement.
That's absolutely true, and I see that every day. I get the phone calls and the emails of folks who are really congratulating our officers on the good job that they do. And you know, Crime Watch is that, hey, you see someone in your community, in your neighborhood, on your block that you don't normally see, then make that 911 call. And that gives that officer an opportunity to come out. And, of course, it's one real quick story. There was an individual who moved in the 800 block on St. Clair Street, and he was moving in about 9 o'clock at night. And the neighbors called 911 because they saw the truck in the driveway and folks unloading or loading furniture. They called 911. The officers came out, and the individual called the next day and says, "We are very happy that they called. Now I know we selected the right neighborhood to be in because people are looking out for one another."
Brother Steve Talley is going to be here if you've got, you know, so somebody may have a Crime Watch question. He's going to do that. Now we're going to move to the folks that really run this. We're out here in the East District. James Waters is the commander of that district, and then the chief. Chief's in his uniform. You know, he's got the uniform back from the Taylor's chief. Rick Heitz, as I mentioned at the beginning of the broadcast, first time we've ever broadcast from inside a police station. And I try to tell the audience, no, I'm not handcuffed. No, I'm not dressed in orange. I'm just dressed in ordinary. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here. Let me begin with that good news. There was that young lady missing Friday afternoon, Tatiana Staten. We got on it on Facebook, on the radio, on Twitter. You guys did it, the media, and from my understanding, the community responded. They were hitting 911. They were coming out trying to, you know, search the neighborhoods. This is what you have asked the community to do.
Well, thank you, Amos. First of all, I want to thank Radio 1 because you've been, again, in the forefront as an entity and community and spreading the good news. At the same time, we talked about when there are times of crisis, you made it very clear to us a long time ago when I first got here that if there ever a need for the police department to reach out, then Radio 1 would be available, and we thank you for that. Well, let's talk about it. A young lady was found. She felt was found safe. It was ironic that there were some radio broadcasts that morning when she was found. About an hour after the radio broadcast on Radio 1, she was found. We believe community has a lot to do with that, with the hard work of police and also community and the family. But we want to make sure this is not the only last time we do that. This is not the last time you're invited to a police district. I'm joined today by Deputy Director of Public Safety, Val Washington, and she helped spearhead this process. We're transparent. We work for you. We work for the community. We were looking forward to have these kind of dialogues. You heard from our counselor slash crime watch specialist. He is a specialist in a lot of ways in terms of keeping us abreast of what's happening in the community. But we have to take a message outside the wall of the policing into the community. And this is their building. This belongs to the community. We want the community to come out, spend some time talking to our commander, getting to know him, getting to know our command staff. But more importantly, be part of the policing mission. And that's what we're asking people to do.
We're here 5 weeks into the new year. And, you know, I printed out today where everything stands in the different districts as of last Wednesday, a week ago. And I'm not trying to put Commander Waters, you know, under the gun or anything. But when you look at the statistics, you ain't happy about what's going on in the East District.
Matter of fact, I just had a long conversation with our command staff and the resources are going to come to the East District. We got bad guys with guns, and it's nothing new. We know who the people are with guns, and we're going to go after them. The problem, again, is in a district like this is when we have these situations, we need the courts corrections to work along with us, but we need the community to report out who these people are. These are not strangers. These are not people who paratroop in our neighborhoods. These, in some cases, our relatives and our friends. So the question is, what are we concerned about when we talk about the values of our community, and what are we willing to do collectively to make sure we identify these people?
Is this, as I look at the map of the East District, it includes some of the poorest neighborhoods in this city and county in terms of income. It includes some of the neighborhoods with the highest rates, of unemployment. Is not just to use that as a crutch and say, aha, these neighborhoods are poor and unemployed. That's why they're having the problem of crime. But is there a correlation?
Well, there is, but there's a sense of pride and values. There are people who value the house they live in, the community they live in, but there are people who encroach on those communities. We have people who have been here 30, 40, 50 years who stay here because they love the community. But we have some people who come into those neighborhoods who try to take over. And we want to work along with Councilor Talley and others to be identify those folk. But, yeah, there are times when we ask ourselves, can we do better? Can we do more with less? That's true. But there was a time in our history, Amos, when we didn't use that as a crutch. We used it as an opportunity. And we have to go back to those times.
Commander Waters, what is the challenge? You know, if I look at the hard numbers, the biggest amount of crime, which I think is throughout the entire city, is larceny. That's just plain old-fashioned, you know, trying to rip somebody off, then robbery, then you get into the more serious violent crimes. What are the challenges out here for your men and women, for your officers, not just the detectives, but those guys and ladies that are driving around in the cars?
There are many challenges, the chief and the mayor's office have been very good at supporting us in our effort to work smarter. We've got better personnel out here on East District. They've been very good at giving us the tools that we need there. But I think the greatest challenge is for the officers to recognize the need to work with the community. We don't have the resources to do it ourselves. We have great officers, excellent training, but we have to work. We have to work with the community to be successful. So, in terms of larcenies, as an example, we work closely with Washington Square Mall. This looks like a violation parking sticker.
Yeah.
On the back, there's some prevention tips, some safety tips, and it's really awkward having this microphone stuck so close to my mouth.
you're not getting a flashback that you're testifying or anything.
I got to tell you, this is unusual for me.
Well, it's unusual. It's unusual for us. Well, let me ask you: is part of this reminding people of common sense, which is Don't leave your cell phone visible in your car. Don't leave the fancy Jay-Z or Beyonce brand new CD visible in your car. Don't leave your weapon if you are legally licensed to carry a weapon under the Second Amendment. Don't leave your weapon visible in your car. Those kind of common sense things?
That is true, but this is an opportunity that I brought to Washington Square for us to partner together on reducing the number of larcenies at Washington Square Mall. So I took that to the mall manager and said, hey, we can't afford to pay for these, but we can certainly provide the officers to distribute them, to put them on the cars and raise awareness and remind people not to leave that stuff out. And so they did that. They bought them, and we put them on the cars. We went through Black Friday weekend without one larceny. So that partnership with the community is it works, but it's also the greatest challenge that we have, I think, because with diminishing resources, that's going to be critical moving forward.
239-1310, 239-1310 is Afternoon News. Amos, this is your opportunity to talk to your police department. The chief is here, the commander is here, and it's not just, even though we're in the East District, Commander Waters is here, your other four or five commanders, they think like this brother here?
Well, they have to, because reality, if we hold them accountable, and I'm looking before you, is preliminary incidents from the week, and we ask every day, what are you doing to remove these dots off the board? So responsibility is understanding our job as arrest offender, solve ongoing problems, and improve a quality of life, but engagement and intelligence-led policing and engaging with police and community as a partnership is at the forefront of all that. So they have to have the mindset and the mantra, be able to, again, identify problems before they become problems, and not be reactionary, but proactive in their thinking.
239-1310, 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. We're using the fancy technology, which means we have a little, you know, delay, slight delay, bounce or whatever, probably because of all these, the fancy computers they have in the operations center. William is on the line at 239-1310. William, you're on the air. Go ahead.
How you doing, Amos?
Fine. Go ahead.
Listen, I have a couple of statements. First, I was listening to the organization speak on how they will deal with crime. But I noticed there are older generations of laws of the people that are dealing with this. I wonder what type of cooperation or correlation do the city and the organization have with the young people? And why doesn't the young people have some involvement in the debate that is going on around the city? Second thing I wanted to do, the assault weapons. Why don't the law enforcement agencies push toward having anybody that use an assault weapon with a grave indifference towards human life or to cause a physical injury to have a law that applies to terrorism, and there'd be an automatic automatic citizen, whether it be 5 years, 10 years, or whatever it is.
Right.
Throw that in.
All right. Let me ask. Well, I'm sorry. The second question first. William was asking about control of assault weapons, but you all enforce the laws. You don't debate them. You don't make them. You just wait till they're written, and then you have to enforce them. And right now, carrying those kind of weapons, if you have a permit, is legal.
That's true, Amos, but we also are concerned about responsible gun ownership. And one of the things we're asking our national partners and law enforcement to consider is whether or not we talk about this whole notion of who should have weapons. That's a constitutional right on the Second Amendment. But looking at the issue of mental health, pre-existing issues, family issues, when you have people in the household who may have an issue with mental health, whether bipolar or other malady, the question is should that weapon be in the household? Should they be allowed to get a gun permit, things of that nature, the kind of conversation we're having among our law enforcement partners throughout the country.
The other question was dealing with what kinds of things is law enforcement doing to engage young people. He kind of started it with Crime Watch, and if you really think about Crime Watches, he was saying that the older generation, Steve Talley, our generation is kind of into Crime Watches. Are you engaging younger folks, you know, homeowners and residents in their 20s and 30s into being part of Crime Watch? And then I think the corollary question, Chief, that William was asking was engaging young people in the larger discussion of not only youth violence over 18 and then those that want to be wannabes under 18, but I'm going to come back and get that. But are younger households, moms and dads, single parents involved in Crime Watch, or is that an area to grow?
Yeah, it's an area to grow, but however they are, as a matter of fact, Commander Waters has charged me with creating and forming Crime Watch block clubs in apartment communities. As a matter of fact, we have several very active apartment communities because people live in a community, an apartment community, because that's where they want to live. So they deserve the same quality of life that you and I and the rest of us live in a traditional block. So we have very active Crime Watch groups in some of the apartment communities out here.
And when we look at the problem of violence, Chief, you guys made a presentation to the Ministerial Alliance yesterday and talked about that over a third of the victims of homicide, over a third of these homicides that have occurred the last 6-7 years here in Indianapolis, Marion County, have been driven by black males age 18 to 34. And the numbers of homicide victims and perpetrators under 18 is very small. Does that also follow for aggravated assault? And the reason I bring that up, when people talk about teen violence, they hear the word teen and they hear the word violence, and they assume that all of this shooting and killing and mayhem is being done by people under 18. And when I look at the data, and I think when officers look at the data, that is not the reality.
You're right, Amos, because it is a learned behavior. A lot of the older adults are involved in the homicides and shootings, but I think the point he raised about the Crime Watch, we need a team Crime Watch. We need to have young people understand that conflict resolution and mediation is the order of the day, and you don't need a weapon in order to settle conflict. But in order to teach, we have to unlearn some bad habits. We have a cycle of violence that existed in certain parts of our community. It has been there for decades, and it's no different than it was 10 years ago. But our job is to call it out for what it is, look at the scientific data, but really engage those young people who are actively involved in those activities.
And let me ask Commander Waters, East District is a racially diverse district, probably more white than African American, some Hispanic. When you look at, particularly those that are involved in aggravated assaults, is there violence occurring by young whites?
Yes, there is. It's across the board. And we try to do things proactively to engage people regardless of race or sex or gender.
The bad folk off the street.
Right. And there is one thing I'd like to point out that we're doing. We've engaged a group called Strategies for Youth. Lisa Thoreau is an attorney, and she's from the East Coast, and we've got her under a grant to specifically deal with it's a program called Policing the Teen Brain.
Policing the Teen Brain, trying to figure them. Good luck. If you figure that, would you please let me know?
We are working on that, and as a proud father of a 21-year-old, I understand those challenges. But what we're trying to do is teach those young officers how the teenage brain develops so that they understand, I wish I had known what I know now from Lisa before my daughter reached those teenage years. But what we find is a clash that stems from ignorance on both parts. The officers don't understand how the young officers don't understand the teenage brain and how that works and dealing with teens, but also teaching teenagers what to expect from law enforcement and teaching their parents as well. She's got a game called Juvenile Justice that we're going to be engaging people in libraries and teaching kids and parents and police what to expect from one another so that we don't end up with a lot of arrests for things like disorderly conduct and handicapping our young people with criminal histories.
Let me go to Tamika right quick, then we'll take a break at 239-1310. Tamika, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question and concern. I was a victim of crime. I live on the east side, and on December 21st, my house was robbed by three gunmen early in the morning. My family and I, my son, my mother, and I were all beat and held at gunpoint, robbed. And I've heard from my story actually aired on Fox 59 on January 1st and January 2nd. From December 21st to January 1st, January 2nd, I heard from the detective one time. since then, I haven't heard from the detective at all concerning my case. And I just, you know, like, I've asked for extra patrol on certain nights where I haven't felt comfortable in my house. What do we do to get the extra patrol? How do I get involved? I've lived in this house my entire life. This house belonged to my grandmother, so I've been there over 35, you know, my family's home, this house, over 35 years. What are we supposed to do to stop this from happening? Because I never imagined this to happen to my family.
All right, Tamika, I don't want you to give your exact address over the public airwaves. Give me two big cross streets near where you live.
34th and Emerson.
Okay. Is 34th and Emerson your area?
Yeah.
Commander?
Oh, that's actually North District. It's just north of our boundary.
All right. You're slightly north of the boundary, but here's Commander Waters in Chief. Tamika was the victim of crime December 21st. Three gunmen came in, held her at gunpoint. The story was on Fox 59 right at the beginning of the year. From December, from the time of the incident to the first part of the year, they had heard from the detective, but they have not heard from the detective since. They have asked for maybe extra patrols. The victim does not kind of feel safe in her house. These are the kinds of feedback that I get. First of all, Tamika, I'm going to ask you, Chris is going to take you off air, and if you would be so kind as to give Chris on my staff your name and a number where you can be reached during the day, and the chief's folks will follow up with you. But on these kind of things where there's a victim of crime, they have reported it, your detectives have started detecting, and then people don't hear that feedback. How do you want victims to proceed? How do you want the community to proceed with that? Because I'm sure detectives, they got big caseloads.
Well, we've been improving that triage of calls and complaints. We have a person who, Lieutenant Riddle, has been fielding a lot of those calls and complaints. What we want them to do is understand this. We want you to tell us what's going on. And you and I have done several of these kind of on-radio kind of interview kind of comments and complaints. We want to take our information off air, and we promise someone to get back to it. But what we want to do is develop that rapport. I know people don't always want to report directly to the police. Whether they come to you, whether they come to the church, however we get the information, we need to get that information.
But if someone, you know, has made the report and they have not heard from a detective or the detective on the case, or they've not gotten any kind of update, how do you want people to respond? Do you want them to, in other words, if they don't get an answer back from the detective, where do they move up that chain of command to, you know, shake the tree to get a response, even if the response is nothing's going on with the case right now, and it might be detectives reluctant to want to talk to a victim to tell them there's nothing new, thinking that that's not going to be what that victim would like to hear?
Well, to be honest with you, Amos, at this point, I like reading those complaints and hearing about them so we can triage it. We have a plan in place to deal with it on the long term, but I like to have them send it directly to me. Richard.height@andy.gov. And from there, we'll get back to you within 24 to 48 hours with a response, because it's important for us to know exactly what the volume is. That I've heard that before, and I have some ideas as to what changes we're going to make in relative to that. But we want to make sure that, in fact, the detective is working on the case. In most cases, they are. But we may just need to give a call and update to assist. And I had one not too long ago. I actually ran into the mother of an assault victim who made it very clear to me she wasn't satisfied. And I got back to her because the detective was about to make an arrest. So a lot of times they're not ready to give you that information until they actually have made their arrest. So we don't want to interfere with that kind of investigation because he's that close. So, but in those cases, we will give you a good news message. But in other cases, we want to give an update message.
Sometimes the lack of response may be because the detective is doing his or her job, and they're close, and they don't want to blow the case.
I can give you one case where we're working on a serious investigation. It's still pending, where we're identifying some gang members we're about to take federally. We weren't able to give all the information they wanted, but they got enough information to know we're still on it, and we gave them updates. That's what we want to continue to do, and we indicted 12 people at that time.
239-1310. 239-1310 afternoon's name is. We are live from the Department of Public Safety's Regional Command, important, whatever this is, center. The old Eastgate Shopping Center is also the home to IMPD's East District. 239-1310. 239-1310 afternoon's with Amos, brought to you by the Indiana Civil Rights Commission. And when we come back, you notice that Commander Waters mentioned some of the positive things he was doing to reduce crime in Washington Square. When we come back, we'll ask him, how come we've never seen, heard about problems with young people at Washington Square? Russ McQuaid of Fox 59, he's never gone out there. So what's going on at Washington Square? Maybe we can replicate it every place else. Yeah, I know. It's After News with Amos After These. 239-1310, 239-1310, it's After News with Amos. Lieutenant John Walton with IMPD, who knows all about young people and kids. We were talking during the break, and you were telling me that they aren't really hanging out at Washington Square like some of these other places.
Well, first of all, Amos, I want to commend you for coming out to East District, taking the initiative to do this program. I think it's very important that we communicate to the community and share a lot of valuable information. Right now, and I have kids that are grown, kids that are teenagers, so basically the buzz with the social media is pretty much going to downtown mall and hanging out at the canal, also going out to Castleton. So a lot of times that's just driven by the children deciding, you know, this weekend where we're going to hang out, and that information gets out there, and that's where the kids go.
And instead of not telling anybody what they're doing, they out there on Facebook and Twitter letting you all know, and y'all are reading that.
Yes, sir, we are. I also like to emphasize the great working relationship we have with Washington Square, particularly the mall manager and their security, and they've dedicated additional resources anticipating an increase in traffic after the downtown incident. And we, too, have dedicated additional resources because it is a partnership. So this Friday and Saturday, we're going to have our NROs, neighborhood resource officers, working both inside the mall and outside Washington Square to make sure that those folks that live out here can have a safe place to go shop.
239-1310, 239-1310's afternoon's name. Let me go back to the phones. Don is up next. Don, you're on the air. Go ahead.
How you doing, Amos? And your
I'm
guests?
Fine.
Hey, and I want to just say congratulations to your guests, and I want to applaud them for the work that they're doing trying to curb the violence here in Indianapolis. But my question is, you know, Ogden Williams' name is never mentioned in the conversation, and I believe he's the mayor of neighborhood. And I'm just wondering, what is his position? What does he do? What is his job description? How does he bring together the police and the different groups to try to solve some of the issues that are happening in our neighborhoods? Because I guess he came from a neighborhood, Hallville. He was actually the mayor of Hallville. And he's really more suited, or he understands the black community, I would think, more than maybe anyone on the mayor's staff. So what is he doing? What is his... what's his role? And I'll hang up and listen for the answer.
That's a good question. Don was raising the deputy mayor for neighborhoods because, obviously, as law enforcement are working with neighborhoods, you got Crime Watch here working with neighborhoods. We've got a deputy mayor over neighborhoods. And in the past, I can remember in the Hudnut administration, the Goldsmith administration, the Peterson administration, the deputy mayors working, particularly deputy mayors that had oversight over neighborhoods, working with the public safety director, working with Chief Height, your predecessors, in dealing with that. How active is the deputy mayor in working with you, with public safety director Riggs, in dealing with these issues?
Very active. And to tell you that on Saturday during the summers, we were out together marching in neighborhoods. We just had a recent meeting where he attended, and he had the meeting in terms of community engagement. But I think it's important that the mayor's office has been supportive of our mission of trying to build out this whole community connection. Ogden Williams is no stranger to the community. He's been around a long time, and one of the founders of Chris Moore House, the boxing program and the POW program. There's a lot that he's doing. But, again, I think we can't do it alone with government. When we're pushing the message back to, we're here with Chaplain Cody, our chaplain, community chaplain came out of this process to work along with the clergy, work along with the business community as well. So we're not just using government. We're using all our partners, all our stakeholders around the table and around the city to assist us in this mission.
All right, Brenda is up next at 239-1310. Brenda, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello, Amos.
Hi.
Hello to your guests.
They're fine. Go ahead.
The question I have is two. When you're a victim of crime, the first part of this is, who does the school police report to, especially when there's a case where a school system has committed a crime against a parent and a child, and it's a form of retaliation?
Okay, so Brenda's first question is, who do school police report to? So in other words, if a parent feels that a school system may have allegedly broken the law or maybe not, you know, retaliated against a parent or a student, and that, you know, feels that a crime has been committed, who do they report to? Are school police autonomous? Do they have police powers on their own to arrest and bring people here to this police station or down to the APC or down to the juvenile center?
Yes, and they have the police chief, who is a competent man, who really is a former IMPD member, and their department is trained pretty much like we are, in the sense that they've been given the same powers on school property. If there's an issue, we work in tandem with them, and the commander can talk about what some of those relationships have been in the past, but I can tell you it's a strong relationship right now.
But if someone feels that a school has broken the law, is that something where, you know, that individual, that resident, that citizen could come to a police station and file a swear out a complaint, or does that have to go through the prosecutor's office?
Well, they can bring any concerns they have to us, and we'll be happy to work with the school police if it is a non-criminal issue to resolve whatever their concerns are. If it's a criminal issue, then yes, we can work with the prosecutor's office and find the appropriate investigative authorities.
Brenda, you had a second question.
Yes. My question is, in this case, it would be a educational record that was falsified by the school officials, and I took it down to the police station to file a criminal complaint. But what I was told was is that it did not, in other words, so-called, when they investigated, it did not measure to a criminal offense, but under Indiana state statute, it would be considered a felony. So I'm not understanding that if they used the statute under the Indiana Code, why wasn't it processed as a felony against the school official who falsified that document?
I think Brenda is asking if there was a case where a school document was falsified, which makes that's a public record document, you know, that's perjury or sounds like perjury. If an individual had evidence of that, did they bring that to the prosecutor? Did they bring that to law enforcement?
We're getting into the weeds of a conversation, and I think we're at the point we need to have offline. But there's a complaint, as the commander indicated. We have fiduciary responsibility to take a complaint and forward it to the proper authorities. But this sounds like something we need to, really, at this point, I think we need to table until we can talk to off air about this.
All right, so Brenda, hold on, and Chris will get your information and they'll forward that to the chief's office. That'll allow me to switch and talk to Anonymous at 239-1310. Anonymous, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Victim assist. What?
Anonymous. Anonymous, hold on. The phone you're using is kind of breaking up there. Kind of repeat, if you would, for me, please.
Okay. I want to know what type of assistance can a victim get, a victim of a crime, and is there any monetary compensation for a victim of a crime in the state of Indiana?
That's a great question. What kind of assistance? See all these questions you're being asked. That's going to see how good you passed that test you had to do to make sure that. This is what he should have. This should have been the test coming on the radio and tested instead of the little written test. But there's a trial by fire. But what kind of assistance is there for victims? Is it only for certain types of? Is there a particular crime that you are concerned about or have a question about in terms of victim assistance? Caller?
Well, no, any type of crime. I know, like, in the state of California, if you get a hit and run or any kind of crime that's against a person or injury, they have a program where they get a certain amount of compensation, and they get some assistance, you know, like a support, like a support group or something like that.
Okay, I get it. Well, now, you know, this isn't California. We don't have billion-dollar deficits in California. But, David Cody Chaplin, what I know there is a victims assistance fund for certain things, but you're out there all the time, particularly on the homicides. What is the victims assistance that is out there for victims of crime in this community?
Amos, there is a, within our victim assistance unit, there is a compensation fund called the Victim Assistance Compensation Fund. It is an application process. They can fill that information out, and then it goes back to our victim assistance unit, and they will make determination of what they can do and how much they could help them.
So if Anonymous, you know, has been the victim, you know, of a crime, she needs to get a hold of the Victim Assistance Unit at IMPD and fill out the paperwork.
Or they can call me directly, and I'll get them in touch with them. I believe the number is 327-3310.
All right. So hopefully he's got that right, 327-3310.
Let me give you my number, 327-3362.
All right. So Anonymous, 327-3362. Give Chaplain Cody a call.
I was really just asking in case victims didn't know that they had available funds or available
assistance. Who said they didn't know?
No, I was asking just in case the victims of a crime did not know that. You know,
okay.
If that wasn't a knowledge they were just privy to, you know, I just want to make sure they get some compensation or have some kind of support after you've been a victim of a crime.
You know, I'm going to ask this, you know, a lot of this time of this program, I ask dumb questions, and maybe I get a good, we learn something. If you're at a crime scene and it's a serious crime, is information given to victims or the victims' families of not only their rights, but, you know, the victims assistance office, where they can, you know, call or go, you know, for support groups, like, you know, support groups, you know, for victims of violence? Is that information given by anyone? Is that, that's what the chaplains do?
Yeah, anytime there's an individual at a crime scene, be it on the perpetrator side or the victim side, there are issues that arise from those, and we'll make sure that they get to the appropriate agencies that can help them. But within victim assistance, there's also resources for counseling, resources for support groups, peer groups.
What happens if it's a crime scene and maybe the chaplains are all tied up on other things and it's just the officers that are out there on the street? Are the officers empowered to, like, leave a card, commander, or something that says, you know, there's some assistance that can be provided?
We do. In fact, there's a victim card where we write the case number and the CAD number, and there's a list of investigative units and phone numbers, contact information. And the officers are all aware of our victims assistance unit and the resources that are available.
I appreciate it. And see, we're learning stuff. 239-1310. 239-1310 this afternoon's name is. We'll take a break. We are live at the East District Headquarters, the Department of Public Safety. What is the title of this building?
Regional Operations Center.
Regional Operations Center. Rock. Y'all had enough rocks to protect this place, my Lord. Anyways, after those names, we're in the old Eastgate Shopping Center, and you wouldn't recognize it. I don't even know what store I used to be in here back in the day. Anyways, after those names, a week tomorrow, City County Councilor Jose Evans, folks from the NAACP and others, they've got some concerns about the proliferation of charter schools. They will be with us. We'll also talk to the folks from Fox 59. They are doing a special program tomorrow about school violence. Now, I don't know why they went to Fishers High School to talk about school violence, but whatever's right. But we'll talk to them about that on Friday. The campaign to preserve Social Security, we will tell you all about that and talk to them. Next Wednesday, week from today. You got kids planning to go to college. You got kids in college. Are you planning to go to college or Ivy Tech or a trade school? You know, College Goal Sunday is coming up, and we're going to do something we've never done before. We're going to spend a full program explaining how to fill out the financial aid forms that are more complicated than the 1040. This could be the most popular show, not everywhere, because everybody wants to figure out how to get financial aid for their kids, for themselves. We'll walk you through the process. That is next Wednesday. It's Afternoons with Amos after these. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. We're the chief of the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, Rick Height. We're out in the East District, so we're with the commander of the East District, James Waters. Lieutenant John Walton is here. City County Councilor Steve Talley is here with his day job. He's a coordinator of Crime Watch. Chaplain David Cody of IMPD is here. Deputy Public Safety Director, she just make notes. Valerie Washington is here. 239-1310. Back to the phones. Daryl is next. Daryl, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. Good afternoon. I have a question. Are there any, and I don't know if this question has been posed before or not, but are there any civilians that are on the, I guess you call it a disciplinary board with an officer who may have messed up or something, and are there any civilians on there? If not, how do you get on that board? Or a person that doesn't have police background or anything, how would that individual get on the civilian board? That's where I'm looking for, the civilian board, yeah.
Are you talking about the board that disciplines police officers or the board that hears complaints or both?
Both, actually.
Okay, I know the both boards, the Civilian Complaint Review Board, are all civilians. And I think there's a couple of ex officio members. They don't get to vote, but they get to attend. One is a representative of the Fraternal Order of Police, as I remember, and one I think is a retired officer. And then the Police Merit Board, those are all civilians, again, who make the decisions. And then I think a member of the FOP is ex officio. So civilians are involved in both of those processes, correct, Chief?
Absolutely. Members of the City Council also are included in that. And it is an oversight board that determines the promotion, and separation of members of the law enforcement.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I know it's probably a voluntary board, but get onto that?
It's not a voluntary board. You have to be nominated and appointed either by the City County Council on a bipartisan basis or the mayor's office. So it's voluntary in the sense you don't get paid. But it is not. The other thing is, if you are interested in serving, I would start with your member of the City County Council.
Okay. All right. That's why I was kind of curious on that. And so thank you very much.
All right, you're welcome. Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Anonymous, you're next. Go ahead.
Yes, the question that I had were, I was in a process where I was jumped on, beaten halfway to death, knocked out teeth. To this day, I can't eat right. Some of my speech is still messed up. And I was supposed to be rewarded $2,000, and I haven't seen a crime dime or anything from that. How do I go by looking into that?
Who awarded you these damages? Who said you were going to get $2,000 because of that?
Oh, I went to the prosecutor downtown in the city county building. I went down there and prosecuted, accused against the guy, and went to court and everything. They gave me
Hold it. You went to court. Did the judge say you get $2,000 and bang the gavel?
Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry. Yes, sir. He sure did.
Was it? Hold on. Was this regular court or small claims court?
This was a regular court, from my understanding. They just
Let me ask you another question. When did this occur? What year?
This was approximately, a year and a half ago.
All right. So you have a court order ordering. Was this a criminal case or a civil case?
Good question. I would say a criminal case because, like I said, I was sitting on someone's porch and a guy just came up and started.
Hold on. If it was a criminal case, somebody beat you up, somebody should have gone to jail. But let me ask you this: who represented you? Were you represented by an attorney?
No, sir. No. They didn't. They was claiming that I didn't even need an attorney. I just the prosecutor asked me, did I want to press charges, and I said yes, and told me to be here on such and such day at such and such time.
In that courtroom, on your side of the table, you were next to a deputy prosecutor?
Yes, sir. I was next to a deputy prosecutor that supposedly gave him 2 years and rewarded me with $2,000. And like I said,
So the bad guy got 2 years, and there's supposed to be damages to you for $2,000.
Yes, sir.
Restitution.
Yes.
That's what it sounds. Now, yes. So what I'm not sure about is whether getting the restitution is on you or whether the prosecutor's office needs to get on their J-O-B and, you know, file against this person. Is the person that you're supposed to get restitution from right now in jail?
From my understanding, yes, because I was claimed that they were supposed to contact me the day that they let him out because they supposedly put an automatic restraining order where he's not supposed to be within 200 miles of me. So
wait, 200 miles?
Yes,
are you
sir.
Sure?
That's what they told me. Now, I'm just
wait. Do you have? Hold it. Forget what they told you. You got copies of the paperwork?
Yes, sir. I would have to go in here and dig it all up, but I'm sure I.
All right.
Here's what
I need you to do, because this sounds like I need to follow this up with the prosecutor's office. If you would hold on and give Chris your name and a phone number where you could be reached during the day, I'll get a hold of the prosecutor's office and they'll get a hold of you and find out who's supposed to be getting you restitution. Okay.
Hey, I appreciate it, sir.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310 is after news. Namus, let me go back to the phones. And Bobby is next. Bobby, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I was robbed New Year's Eve. A friend of mine, I let him in my apartment to use my bathroom, and he robbed me. So So when I got a hold of the detective, she told me that I couldn't press the charge or anything because I let the person in my apartment. Is that true?
Hold it. All right, let me make sure I got this. On New Year's Eve, you let someone into your apartment. Did you know who this individual was?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so this was somebody you knew. You let them into your apartment to use the facilities. Then
yes,
this
sir.
Person turned around and robbed you.
Yes, sir.
Correct?
Yes,
did
sir.
They use a weapon? Did they pull
no,
a gun
he did
on
not
you?
Use a weapon.
So how did they get? How did they take advantage of you if they didn't use a weapon?
Well, I was okay. He used my bathroom. My bathroom is in the back of my apartment. I was in the front of my apartment reading a book, and so I didn't check on him because
okay.
You know I knew him, I trusted him.
Oh, so he larcened. So he absconded of stuff from your apartment, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. I think that's larceny. I don't know whether that's robbery or larceny. And the question is, Commander, the detective said they wouldn't press charges. Is that something they would do, or should a report have been made anyway?
We'll make the report, and then we review that with our community prosecutors, and they determine whether or not they're actually going to pursue prosecution.
Let me ask you this: was a report made, or the detective was a report filed in this case?
No, the detective told me she would not. I would do me no good if I file a report because I'm the one letting him in my apartment.
Okay, I'm hearing the brass kind of say no. The report should have been made anyway. So I want you, Bobby, to hold on. I want you to give Chris your name and a phone number where you can be reached during the day, and the chief's IMPD will follow up with you and get that report made.
Yes, sir. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. I appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. Police are learning a lot. We're all learning a lot. We want to hear from you. 239-1310. 239-1310. We're live from the Regional Operations Center of the Department of Public Safety, East District Command Center. It's Afternoons with Amos after these.